Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday morning, July the 20th. Wondering this hour how you think this country and the medical community should try to combat the growing obesity epidemic. Are environmental reasons to blame for our bulging waistlines, or is this in our genes, or are we not trying hard enough? Do we lack willpower? We noticed an essay in the New York Times the other day by our guest physician who says, based on a series of scientific discoveries, the importance of willpower in promoting weight loss is becoming an obsolete notion. And he wonders, is it worth saving? Well, what do you think? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. When you see an overweight person, or maybe you're overweight yourself, do you blame this on the big portions given to us at restaurants? Do you blame this on glitzy marketing that convinces us to eat too much junk food? Maybe you think it is genetic. Or does willpower or lack of willpower fit into the picture? Our guest is Barone Lerner, Associate Professor at Columbia University Medical Center. He is author of When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. And his essay, As Diet Ideas Abound, Is Willpower Obsolete?, appeared in the July 10th edition of the New York Times. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So it used to be that we thought people who were fat were lazy or lacked willpower. Doesn't that idea still persist?
Well, the idea still persists. The question is it a legitimate idea? I mean, for many, many years, for centuries really, that was the assumption that people who were overweight didn't have the willpower, didn't have the ability to limit what they ate or to exercise enough, and that's why they were overweight. But it's these new studies that are coming out and these new perspectives on the problem that have begun to change things.
So the tide is turning on that.
It is, yes.
And like what? What new studies?
Well, one set of studies are studies that look at people's diets and their ability to diet and keep the weight off, and there's really study after study that shows while some people seem to be able to lose a lot of weight on diets and a smaller percentage can keep the weight off, the vast majority of people who go on diets are unsuccessful, even seemingly if they're trying, which led people to say, well, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. If people are adhering to diets, why aren't they losing weight? And that's when these other ideas begin to come in. So the notion that the problem is not with the person, but it's either with the society, which promotes overeating, or in the person's genes that makes them stay overweight.
Yeah. Well, you, though, are questioning whether whether we should just dismiss willpower.
Well, you know, it's I mean, as someone who, you know, grew up in thinking about willpower and sort of trained as a doctor, being talking about the importance of diet and exercise, it's hard to give that up entirely. There are certainly one other factor that's important is that there are other health benefits from eating well, even if you're not losing weight. So that's certainly one obvious reason that people should continue to watch their diets. But I also, in the essay, did want to play around with the notion a little bit of, you know, whether even if these studies show that there's not a huge amount you can do as far as your weight goes, whether or not it's still good for doctors to encourage their patients to do their best.
And you still do that?
I do that. And at the end, I sort of call myself old-fashioned, and I'm sort of poking fun at myself a little bit. And look, there's going to be a lot more studies that come out, but it's sort of this tension between how we have understood a health problem for many, many years and conflicting data and how, as a doctor at least, that I try to put those two things together.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm thinking if we indeed do limit our portion sizes, exercise, maybe sacrifice a little bit and don't eat those really fattening foods and really watch it, really have willpower, are we really going to be 300 pounds? Is that going to be in our genes?
Well, I think, you know, it clearly depends on the person. I think that if people really are diligent and really do an enormous amount of exercising and watch their portions, almost everyone's going to lose weight. Now, some people would lose more weight than others. But the problem is, as soon as people sort of go off that very regimented diet, the problem is that people who are prone are probably going to gain it back. And so then the question becomes, how worth it is it to sort of pound these behaviors into people when the benefits of it are not as clear as they used to be?
Yeah. Well, let's see what listeners think. Our guest is Dr. Baron. I'm sorry I mispronounced your name. Dr. Baron Lerner, Associate Professor at Columbia University Medical Center. He is the author of When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine, and he also wrote an essay that appeared in the New York Times recently, As Diet Ideas Abound, Is Willpower Obsolete? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Now 17 minutes past 6 o'clock. John Munson in for Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. After 5, John's guest says although no government agency is willing to call it a tax, the lottery is nonetheless a source of tax revenue. But it fails the test of sound tax policy. That's coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about dieting. We're talking about the obesity epidemic and what is the answer to helping all of us lose weight and keep it off. Is this a problem that the answer lies in our genes, or is this an environmental problem, or is this a lack of willpower? And is willpower obsolete now? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our first caller is Dan in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'd just like to first say that I don't think obesity has to do a lot with genetics because from an evolutionary standpoint, those genes just didn't make it. If you were overweight or underweight, you didn't survive. You couldn't run away from things. And that's why if you look in the wild, you don't see overweight animals, you don't see overweight monkeys or deer or anything along that nature because it's just not natural. And then secondly, the reason that so many diets fail is because so many of them are low-calorie diets, which is kind of like trying to take in a little bit less air with each breath. Eventually, you just have to take in a bunch of deep breaths. And that's like 80% of diets are based on that notion. That's why they fail. The answer to the problem is a low-fat, plant-based diet, which excludes most meat and dairy products, and it's not very popular, and it's completely underrated from a taste standpoint. And the meat and dairy industries have managed to deceive us to think that human beings need animal products to survive or be healthy, which we don't. A plant-based diet is not calorie-restricted. You can eat almost as much as you want. You lose weight slowly, and it's a lifestyle, and you can keep it off.
Yeah, but can you keep the diet up?
Yeah, it becomes a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You just eat plants, and
yeah,
it fills you up.
Well, Dr. Lerner, do you want to comment?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on that particular diet, but, it's clear that there are many, many options out there, and some work better for some people. But, you know, the issue really is the ability, you know, the caller was talking about changing a lifestyle, and part of it is there's probably relatively few people who are motivated to do that. We do see some success stories, particularly a lot of people who really get into exercise and really can maintain a diet. But they're relatively few on average. And certainly of the patients that I see, you know, I just have many, many patients who are overweight, and we try this diet and that diet. And for all these reasons that we've talked about, whether it's too much food in their house or their genes or the fact that they just can't stick to it, they just don't lose significant amounts of weight.
Yeah. What about Dan saying that it can't be in the genes? What studies indicate that there could be a genetic component?
Well, what's now coming out, there's been a series of studies. For example, they're finding hormones that people have in the body in different levels. So certain people have hormones that help them metabolize food more quickly than others. There's some studies that most recently have come out that talk about the ways that insulin is secreted in the body after you eat. And there are people who sort of secrete a lot of insulin, people who secrete smaller amounts of insulin. And based on that, what's going on there, it's clear that certain people are prone to gain weight and others are not. So it's not, you can't just point to one single gene and say, this person's prone to be fat and this person's going to be underweight. But it's clear there's something going on in the body physiology that when you eat, certain people's bodies respond differently than others.
Yeah. But how does that explain why the obesity rate is increasing so much in the past couple of decades?
Well, that's a good question. And, scientists are beginning to look at this. There's always possibility that the genetic pool is shifting a little bit and there's some type of genetic mutations that are making people more prone to eating. But that's a good question that lets me talk a little bit about the environmental hypothesis. Mm-hmm. And the people who favor that would say the problem is there's much more fatty food available. It's being advertised, especially to children. And the reason people were thinner 50 years ago is there weren't these fatty foods. People didn't eat out as much. People exercised more. And the idea of the environmental hypothesis is to try to return to that time, to try to put in safeguards in society that make it more difficult for children, for example, or adults to eat bad foods, to cut back on advertisements to children, to potentially tax fatty foods at a higher rate, to use the strategies that were used to try to get people to smoke less. And the idea there is if you can get governments to put in these safeguards and these restrictions on these types of foods, the whole population is apt to lose weight.
Let's go next to Gary in Menominee. Hi, Gary.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I lost weight. I was like 216, and I'm down to 185 and maintaining it since March. And the biggest thing I did was I gave up soft drinks. And I noticed what got me in trouble was when I was little, you have a soft drink, and it was like 12 ounces. Well, now it was 20 ounces, and I was having like six of those a day. And I just tweaked my portions when I ate out a little bit, but that's all I did to lose my weight, and it's just been wonderful.
Yeah, well, that would point to this environmental theory, wouldn't it, Dr. Lerner?
It would, and it's actually a combination. I think, people can argue about willpower and dieting for days and days, but the point that pretty much everybody would agree on is that portion control is a good idea, and that we have gotten into this mindset where you get these enormous portions at restaurants where even at home, I think we give each other huge portions. And that's about the first thing I tell my patients who are overweight is to, when they get their plate, either at the restaurant or at home, to take one third of the food and push it to the side and not eat it and to eat more slowly. And, the point about the soft drinks is a great one because, ironically, some people will actually exercise and be very good about that, and then they come home and they're really thirsty, and then they take in more calories than they burned off by what they eat afterwards. So portion control, I think, even if people aren't as successful as the caller, is a great idea.
Yeah. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What's the answer to losing weight? Is willpower obsolete? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The overall point of your essay, though, Dr. Lerner, is that you are saying that willpower still probably needs to have a place here, but that the scientific community and maybe even the medical community needs to be looking elsewhere for the answer to the obesity epidemic?
That's true. I think that as these studies have shown, the willpower hypothesis is really becoming outdated. But I do think, in part, it's very difficult to get rid of something that people have sort of hung their hat on for so long. For years and years think of a problem in a certain way and society understands a problem that way, it's hard not to continue to conceptualize. You can think about alcohol and cigarettes as another interesting idea. Even though we know, for example, that putting patches on smokers makes more sense than just telling people, oh, come on, stop and go cold turkey, there's still part of us, I think, as a society that says, gee, why can't that person just stop smoking? Why can't that person just stop drinking? Why can't that person stop overeating? And I think it's important now that we realize that it's not so easy for people to do it, but in our hearts and in the way that people have understood these things, we still tend to think that it's an issue of responsibility and willpower.
Yeah, there's a real stigma still placed on overweight people, though. There's this report that just came out, I think it was just this week, that overweight children are really stigmatized by their peers. Did you see that?
I didn't see that, but I've seen other studies that suggest that, and it's a real, you know, it's a really unfortunate problem because, you know, whether kids are overeaters or whether they're genetically predisposed or whatever, I mean, it's really obviously terribly unfortunate when these kids have, who feel rotten about themselves a lot of the time, are getting stigmatized by other kids.
Yeah, and then you feel worse than you might eat more.
That's quite true.
Yeah. Pat in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, thank you. You know, I didn't hear all of your program from the beginning, but to me, when you look at the weight problem in this country and then you compare it to the rest of the world, that tells us that it's primarily values, emphasis, culture, you know, advertising. Certainly there's variability in people's genetics and their tendency to gain weight. I know friends that struggle with that. But if you look at the normal distribution of those kinds of things, at least 80% of us, probably 95% of us, that's not the case. But also if you think about the changes in lifestyle since the Second World War, people don't live on farms. We sit on our butt and watch TV all the time. We drink, like the guy said, these enormous quantities of soda that's just thousands of empty calories. So to me, I think it's very dangerous to think that willpower isn't the primary factor at work, because it is. We still make choices, like you talked about the food portions. The other guy that talked about the vegetarian diet, I'm from the Midwest, was raised here, and I'm back here, but lived for quite a while in California and Illinois, and we sort of gradually got in the habit with my wife and the kids, slowly got away from eating much meat. And to be honest, it's a little more work preparing a healthy diet or food, but it's far, far more satisfying and better, much better for your weight. So I think that the whole concept of let's put willpower aside, that's just so much baloney. We have a lot of friends in Europe, and they enjoy eating. They love to eat. They love to drink. But they don't just sit around all the time, and they don't have this heavy emphasis on lousy foods that are being advertised and sold to us. So that's it. I'll take a comment off the air.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Pat. We'll get that comment after the news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. It's news time, and then we'll continue talking with Dr. Baron Lerner, associate professor at Columbia University Medical Center, talking with him about his essay in the New York Times, "As Diet Ideas Abound, Is Willpower Obsolete?" You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Friday morning, July the 20th. Would more people lose weight and keep it off if they had more willpower? Or are environmental influences and genetics working against us in the battle of the bulge? Is willpower obsolete? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or should our approach to combating obesity look elsewhere? We're talking with Dr. Baron Lerner. He's an associate professor at Columbia University Medical Center. He is author of the book, When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. And we are talking to him about an essay that he wrote that appeared in the New York Times on July 10th, "As Diet Ideas Abound, Is Willpower Obsolete?" And He acknowledges that there are all sorts of theories as to why we are facing an obesity epidemic and why so many of us are failing at dieting. And he acknowledges that willpower alone has not worked for very many people, but still, in the end, it seems to him that it's part of a doctor's job to push patients to try harder, telling them to control portion sizes, avoiding bedtime snacks, and trying to exercise 3 times a week, and says maybe he's old-fashioned, but he still takes that approach. What do you think? What do you think the answer is to the growing obesity epidemic? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Lerner, I wanted to ask you about something that's in the news just this morning, that 11 of the nation's biggest food and beverage companies are going to stop advertising really high-fat, high-sugar junk food to kids during kids' TV shows. Do you think that's a positive step?
Oh, that's completely a positive step. I mean, this is the, as we've been talking about, this is the, what the environmental hypothesis says needs to be done, which is, if kids learn about these products and are exposed to them at school and at home and on TV, they're going to eat them. They're going to want them. That's why so many kids are more overweight now. Therefore, since you can't, once they're around, the kids are going to eat them. The idea is to lower their availability. So if the companies don't advertise as much, the kids are going to know about them less, and the kids are going to consume less of the product. So this is the exact example of what public health experts say you need to do for an obesity epidemic in children.
Yeah. Critics, though, are saying that nobody's forcing parents to buy this junk food for their kids.
Well, you know, the history of public health is full of people who are trying to get people to do better than they can do themselves, right? So people said similarly with smoking, well, you know, no one's forcing these people to go to the store and buy cigarettes. What's the big deal here? They should just stop. And we now know that many people need the helping hand of government if they're going to do better. And this is another example. I mean, I'm not surprised at all, one, to hear that the companies are doing this because there's a lot of pressure to do so. And I'm not surprised, number two, that there's objections from people either sort of on a libertarian perspective or a responsibility perspective that are arguing the opposite.
Yeah. Then on the other hand, I did another program this week on, it was an Associated Press review of nutrition education programs and other programs to try to promote healthy eating among young kids or school students in particular. And they reviewed 57 or so programs all over the country in public schools that were trying to teach healthy eating habits or promote healthy eating habits, and found out that they weren't having any success in changing the way that kids eat, and including this one study where free fruits and vegetables were given to children, and kids got prizes if they ate more fruits and vegetables. And while the prizes were offered, the kids ate the fruits and vegetables, but when the researchers came back after the prizes were gone, six or seven months later, the kids had reverted back to eating soda and chips. So something else is going on here, isn't it?
You know, those are great studies. I mean, anybody who's got kids could have told you those answers without doing the studies, I think. But if it's in front of you, and it's bad for you, you're apt to eat it, right? If you can come up with incentives to encourage people to do the opposite, and the incentives are more powerful than the desire to eat, you win for a while, right? And this, you don't need kids to show you this. This is the same thing with adults. This is why some people are very diligent. They look in the mirror, they say, oh my God, I weigh 220 pounds, I've gained all this weight, I'm going to go to the gym, and I'm going to be a crazy person. I'm going to go to the gym 5 times a week, and I'm going to stop eating these things that are bad for me, and I'm going to change myself. And again, some people do that, but most people will do it for a small period of time. So it's the same thing as the incentives. They're going to lose 10 or 15 pounds. They're going to pat themselves on the back, and they're going to say, ah, I don't look so bad anymore. I did a great job. and then they're going to go stop going to the gym, and they're going to gain the weight back. So it's very analogous to what you're describing with the kids. It's, and again, this is why the environmental people say not only do you need to put fruits and vegetables there as an option, you need to get rid of the bad stuff, and you've got to only offer healthy alternatives to kids.
Yeah, and we have to get rid of the bad stuff because we don't have any willpower.
Because, exactly, because most kids, you know, kids in particular, but most adults can't say no if that stuff is in front of them. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, this is, what do you think the answer, where does the answer lie, Dr. Lurie? You're clinging a little bit to pushing the willpower, but yet you think it might be a lost cause.
Well, I think the answer is multifactorial, which is why this is interesting. I'm certainly an advocate of these environmental changes, particularly to children, because we're not doing much successfully against childhood obesity at this point. So these public health initiatives that are trying to lower advertising to kids of fatty foods and trying to get kids to exercise more through whatever incentives possible, I think are a great idea. But I also think that you don't want to lose the willpower thing completely, because if you tell kids and you tell adults, look, there's absolutely nothing you can do, then people are going to throw in the towel. They're going to say, you know what, I'm prone to being overweight and there's nothing I can do, so I'm not going to try. And that's not logical either, because even the folks who argue for the genetic theory that there's a set point that everybody is at, even those people say there's a range that people can have for their weight. So even if you're prone to be heavy, if you watch your diet and you exercise, you're going to be on the lower side of your set point as opposed to the higher side. So I think it's going to be a multi-pronged effort trying to change what goes on in the environment, but also getting people within reason to still do their best.
Yeah. Well, our regular listeners might have already heard this story, but I did lose quite a bit of weight, I don't know, five years ago or so. I took off more than 50 pounds, and I did it through Weight Watchers. And it was portion control, and I stepped up the exercise, and it was a lot of work, and it still is a lot of work maintaining that weight loss. It does. Sometimes I felt sorry for myself, thinking I'm hungry, I'm tired. I felt good about losing the weight, but it was a struggle to do it, and it remains sometimes a struggle to keep on stepping on that scale and cutting back every week, eating less than what I really want to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you'd fall in the realm of someone who actually has demonstrated willpower, and Weight Watchers is a great example of an organization that helps people maintain their willpower through various strategies. Your ability to keep the weight off makes you more unusual, because a lot of people, as the studies have shown, whether it's Weight Watchers or other programs, generally gain the weight back because they can't maintain that intensity for as long as they would like.
Yeah, and that's because I guess I have the willpower, but my willpower is working against my genetic set point. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, you know, it's right. I mean, you're prone. You know, there's probably sort of a set point that if you did nothing out of the ordinary and you just lived your life and ate what you wanted and exercised when you wanted and didn't try extra hard, you would be at a certain weight.
Yeah, I'd be at a very high weight.
You'd be at a high weight.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I know
and
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's your genes. So that's where your genes put you, which is, you know, most people would say, I guess, bad luck. And you have been willing to push with the willpower more so than most people have. And you're also able, you know, there also will be some people whose genes are so bad, I guess, that even when they do what you've done as far as the diet, they won't be as successful at Weight Watchers as you were. And then there's people, of course, that we need to talk about who will go to something like Weight Watchers or go on another diet, and they just cheat all the time. So,
yeah, and say, I don't understand why I'm not losing weight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I see patients like that all the time. I had one patient for years who swore up and down all she ate was lettuce all day long, and she kept gaining weight, and it clearly wasn't true. I mean, she had convinced herself she was doing that, but it couldn't have been the case.
We're talking about weight loss and the obesity epidemic. And while more scientific studies are pointing to genetics as a determining factor in our weight, our guest physician is not about to rule out willpower completely. He has written an essay about willpower, as diet ideas abound, is willpower obsolete? And we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Do you blame the obesity epidemic, or do you blame an overweight person for having a lack of willpower? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 7 o'clock, U.S. Senator Russ Feingold says that he will not pursue or push for impeachment against the Bush administration. We will talk with a guest after 7 who says Russ should wake up. We'll wonder what you think about that after 7 o'clock. We're wondering if willpower in terms of weight loss is obsolete. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Dr. Baron Lerner, associate professor at Columbia University Medical Center. He is also author of When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. I'm wondering, Dr. Lerner, a lot of celebrities are in the high-profile status right now in the weight loss business. We see Christy Alley and all sorts of other celebrities joining Jenny Craig or Weight Watchers or something else. And of course, there's Oprah has been very public with her weight loss efforts. How does that all fit into this picture?
Well, celebrities have played a big role in publicizing particular diets. Celebrities are obviously, especially on average, are especially concerned about their image and their what they look like, and certainly people who are on TV. So Oprah and Kirstie Alley are good examples of women who had gained an awful lot of weight and decided they wanted to lose weight and then do so very publicly. I think it serves a good purpose because they are alerting the public about the dangers of being overweight, so that's good. When they then sort of link up with a particular company or have these very public diets, they're sending a mixed message. It's a lot about willpower, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at someone like Oprah or Kirstie Alley, you know, they and the also this TV show that's on, I forget the name of it, where celebrities are losing weight.
The Biggest Loser or something.
The Biggest Loser,
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about what did you do since we saw you on TV 2 weeks ago, and how well did you behave, and the notion is very based in willpower, that these people always pigged out, and now they are on TV, and they're going to try their hardest, and they're going to come back 2 weeks later and have lost weight. And some of them can do it, and Oprah's actually a very good example of someone who has very successfully lost weight at times, and it's probably due to the fact that she exercised and watched what she ate, but she often gains the weight back. And the argument there would be that Oprah's probably got a set point for her weight that's higher than she'd like it to be, and that she's sort of going to do this yo-yoing thing perhaps for the rest of her life, where she gets motivated and loses weight. And look, willpower, as we've been suggesting, can work for some people for periods of time, but then she gains it back because she's prone to be at a higher weight.
Yeah. Well, I can sympathize with Oprah.
Yeah.
Darlene in Mount Horeb. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I just wanted to comment that at 3 different times in my life, I have lost over 100 pounds.
Wow.
So I won't say that I don't have willpower. However, this yo-yoing thing I don't think is helping me at all. And I think I've been most successful with my most recent weight loss, being able to keep it off for over 5 years now. But what I have, I think, finally discovered for myself is that life really isn't fair. and that some of us have to work a whole lot harder and eat a whole lot less than other people.
Yeah.
And that's just a reality of life. And I guess at this point in my life, I'm willing to accept that and put in the effort to try to, you know, stay healthy and keep my joints from hurting and things like that.
Well, congratulations, Darlene. That's quite an achievement. And 5 years of maintenance is a huge achievement, too. Right, Dr. Lerner?
Yeah, you know, and I when you hear stories like that, I think the main lesson that people should take away from that is, you know, when you lose that much weight, the reality that most people will be able to keep all of it off is unrealistic, and most people are going to gain back some weight. So what you should do then is think about that environmental thesis we've been talking about. If you've lost all the weight and you want to cheat a little bit, that's okay. But once you start bringing back all the foods into your house that are going to make you gain weight and you start going out to restaurants again, it's all going to come back. So there seems to me to be sort of a logical way that people can proceed, whether it's portion control or just watching what you bring in your house, that can help people maintain weight loss. And I think the unfortunate thing is people see weight loss as an all-or-nothing thing, and they go through these periods of extreme success and extreme intensity. And then once they've succeeded, they feel that their work is done. And hopefully for people who are prone to being at a high weight, they can try to keep the weight off or keep most of it off by just doing logical things after that, just continuing to exercise and continuing to watch their portions and what they're eating.
Yeah, I found for me that the exercise is probably the single most important thing. Over the course of all these diets, I think I've been on every single diet that there is out there. I have gradually cut things out of my eating habits. I also saw a dietitian at the University of Iowa Hospitals who was particularly excellent in helping me make better choices. And I think those things are hopefully what will help me continue to maintain my current weight.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of good information out there. There's certain foods that people might not think are incredibly fattening that are, and so there's a lot that people can learn. And certainly keeping up the exercise is a great idea. And it takes willpower, right? I mean, most people don't want to get up 3 times a week at 6 a.m. and go running, but if you want to keep the weight off, that's certainly going to help some people.
Or if you want to have that bagel, which is a lot more calories than I ever thought it was.
There you go. It's not even the bagels. It's what people put on the bagel.
You're right.
Big globs of cream cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Just have it with a little bit of cream cheese instead of the big glob. There's easy ways to sort of cut back without depriving yourself completely.
Thanks for calling, Darlene. Ralph in Shorewood, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a comment to make. Comment question, actually, about the environmental thesis. And while I certainly agree with you that restricting access to junk foods is a step in the right direction, I was wondering if you have any thoughts about any potential initiatives to actually increase access to healthy foods, because I, for example, for a while had some financial troubles and had to do most of my shopping at an Aldi store, where there was no produce, there was no fresh meats, it was all frozen foods and mostly junk foods. And I'm thinking, you know, people in the inner city, you know, the poor, who, even if they would very much like to feed their children vegetables and fruits, just don't have that option. Or it's, you know, eating healthy is very expensive in America. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a terrific comment. I'm really glad you mentioned that. The patients I care for example, are mostly inner-city patients and have said that exact thing to me, which is the food that they can afford is not the sort of food they would want to eat. And to the degree that government can come up with ways to subsidize healthier eating, that's great. Again, it's worked best if people know about issues in smoking, where, again, it was a relatively poor population who continued to smoke, and health departments now will pay for the patches for smoking, and the rates of smoking are going down as a result. So the hope is, and again, these are difficult government initiatives, and where are you going to find the money and that sort of thing, but helping people to afford better foods is crucial. And what goes along with that also is helping people who don't have a lot of money to join gyms and to be able to exercise. So if you don't have a lot of money and you can't join a gym, that's also going to be something that prevents you from losing weight.
Yeah. Marcia in Spring Grove, we're almost out of time, but you've been waiting, so I want to get you on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Please go ahead, but briefly, please.
All right. What I'd like to say is I'm a certified personal trainer. I've been in the business for about 20 years. And, of course, I think it has to do with exercise. But I've worked with so many people that work out 2 hours a day and can't lose weight. I'm noticing that it's really from the kind of food that people eat. People ate healthier 50 years ago, more whole foods. People are drinking Diet Pop and eating sugar-free processed goods. They have horrible problems with their weight. They're starving all the time because of the food that they're eating.
Yeah. So it's a combination of things, isn't it, Dr. Lerner?
It is. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's one of the, you know, should you tell people to have a ton of diet soda because they shouldn't drink sugary soda? Well, that may not be the greatest solution either. I mean, the best thing, of course, after you exercise is to drink water and then to go out and eat a nice, healthy meal. So that's definitely the best thing to do.
Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Dr. Baron Lerner of Columbia University Medical Center. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.